Good morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. The stereotype about prisoners is that most of them probably didn't do well in school and are illiterate. Well, you might want to change your opinions about what some of them can get out of literature after you've heard about the Great Books in Middle Tennessee Prisons program, which was a 9-week endeavor featuring MTSU, the Tennessee Department of Correction, and the Great Books Foundation, which is a nonprofit educational organization. It was a partnership among all three of those entities in three particular Tennessee institutions: Riverbend, Lois DeBerry Special Needs Facility, and the Tennessee Prison for Women. Dr. Philip E. Phillips, who is an associate professor of English, applied for and got a public service grant and also some money from the College of Liberal Arts. And he's here with us today to talk about how it went. Welcome.
Thank you.
Is this an initial a pilot project that you would like to continue year after year after year, or is it part of an ongoing process?
The program that we offered initially was intended as a pilot program. Mm-hmm. So when I wrote the grant for the MTSU Public Service Committee, I asked for funding to offer Great Books courses in three different Middle Tennessee prisons. And I was hopeful that if the program were successful, that we would be able to continue it.
And that may still come to pass. We'll just have to see about funding.
Yes. The grant money that was given by the Public Service Committee and by the College of Liberal Arts was intended simply as seed money to fund the initial program. And it was understood that it's non-recurring funding. So in order to get further support, we'll have to seek externally for those funds.
Why these particular three institutions as opposed to other penal institutions in the state?
Well, those are the ones that are closest. There are actually five correctional facilities in the Nashville area. And we had initially hoped that we would be able to offer courses in all five of them, but for different reasons, we ended up only being able to do three. But that was a significant step forward because previously nothing was in place.
What sort of an approach did you take in the prisons? Did you do it in the form of a lecture format or a classroom setting, or did you do it in the form of a conversation with everybody just sitting around a table? How structured was it?
One of the reasons for our partnership with the Great Books Foundation was because we wanted to discuss literature in the prisons in a kind of decentered format. We wanted to engage people in dialogue about the literature. And the Great Books Foundation has a method called the shared inquiry method, which is based on the Socratic model, in which the professor is mainly a participant in the discussion. The professor may ask questions and make some statements, but essentially the idea is to pull knowledge from other people. And so we, as instructors in the class, were participants. So when we first arrived in our particular facility, Dr. King and I, we were team teaching at Riverbend. We found classrooms in which all the desks were lined up in neat rows. And one of the first things that I wanted to do was to try to create a circle. And we were able to do that. The inmates at the facility were very receptive to that model.
With about how many at a time?
Our classes consisted of between 10 to 15 inmates at each facility. By the time we got started, maybe 2 weeks into the program, the ones who could not continue or chose not to continue, after they dropped out, we were left with a core group of students, and it was generally around those numbers, which is really ideal for conversations about literature.
How was it determined which inmates would go into the program? Was that the Department of Corrections doing?
Or? The Department of Correction was responsible for facilitating that. There was basically a general call that was issued for those people who would be interested in participating, and those people came to the classes.
So it wasn't hard necessarily to draw people out of their shells in terms of getting warmed up and talking? Or was it difficult? Were some people more taciturn than others?
There was some hesitancy among some people. I think there were some participants were curious and uncertain about what our intentions were in coming into the prisons. We very quickly, I think, established a good rapport with the inmates who participated in our program. And we really tried to promote a sense of community and to foster a sense of respect for other people's ideas. One of the things that we wanted to emphasize in the course not only was an appreciation for literature, but a respect for the pursuit of knowledge and a respect towards other people. We wanted to create an environment in which people were encouraged to share their thoughts and reflections on the literature that they read and to listen respectfully to the ideas of other people in the class. And we found that to be the case.
What were you able to find out about their reading habits? How much did they read? How often did they read? And what did they read?
People who participated in our course came from mixed educational backgrounds. Some who had a very weak background in school, people who did not have very many opportunities, and then others who had read more, and people who were active readers, and some who were frustrated because of the lack of resources and the lack of books in the prison. The course that we offered was not a literacy course. There are such courses, and those are valuable in the prisons, but this was a literature course, and so the students who were in the class had to be able to do the work, and they had to push themselves to do the work, and they did admirably well. It was really amazing. The anthology that we used was called Great Conversations One. It's an anthology that's published by the Great Books Foundation and edited by Dan Bourne, and it includes works from the Epic of Gilgamesh to the fiction of Alice Munro. People like Thoreau and Whitman, Pascal, Montaigne, Young, writers like that, sizable excerpts or complete works by these writers that the inmates read on a weekly basis.
Was there any trepidation on the part of correction officials for you to have the inmates reading Civil Disobedience?
That's a good question. We were warmly received by the institutions. We owe a great deal to Shamila Patel, who is the Director of Education for the Department of Correction. She was the one who helped us with the logistics with the prisons and setting up contact people in each of the prisons to work with the pairs of faculty volunteers. The officers in the institutions were extremely kind to us. So we had a very positive experience overall.
What was the most surprising reaction to the literature that they read that you heard from an inmate? Did it produce any kind of insights that you weren't expecting from these guys and women?
Well, I think that they often surprise themselves. I'm having a difficult time thinking of a particular incident, but I there were numerous times when the participants in the course would say that they never thought about an issue in a certain way, or they thought that they felt this way about an issue, and then they read this and they rethought their beliefs. And there were times when we would be in the middle of a conversation, and one participant would offer an interpretation of a passage, and then another person would say, "Well, I see why you read it this way, but I see it in a different way." And of course, the goal in our shared inquiry method was to say, "Well, let's look at the text. Where in the text do you see this happening, and why?" Then the student would look in the text and read a passage out loud and comment on that. And then we would engage in dialogue, and never once did we get into any kind of heated, confrontation. I mean, people probably have stereotypical ideas about what happens in a prison, but all the participants in our course treated each other with respect, and they listened to what the other members had to say. If they disagreed, they disagreed, but they said why.
Was there any particular author in the anthology who became a favorite?
Different people like different authors. It was interesting. Some people really liked Pascal. We read some excerpts from the Pensée. And
explain that for people who haven't read it.
Well,
in 25 words or less.
In 25 words or less.
This is the box top version.
Yeah. One of the ideas in the Pensée has to do with the argument for the belief in God, and whether in the absence of knowing whether or not there is a God, you're better off going with the idea that God does exist, mm-hmm. which led to a lot of thoughtful conversation about religion, religious beliefs, and thinking. You know, another author who many people liked was Montaigne, and his essay on friendship. And of course, while we certainly encourage focusing on the text and grappling with the ideas in the text, we did not discourage people from sharing some of their own personal experiences if they were relevant to the text. One of our goals, of course, was to keep things focused on the subject at hand. But it was an opportunity for meaningful discussion of people's personal experiences and how they came to see things in different ways based on what they read.
Mm-hmm. Did anybody ever say, for example, say reading Walt Whitman, for example, mm-hmm. And then find out about his sexual orientation and then go, "I never would have guessed." You know, think revelations like that pertaining to the author's biographical data?
There were some reactions like that. In the anthology that we used, there was a headnote for each of the authors that would say something about their life, the lives of the authors, and some of the dominant themes that we would encounter, which I thought the headnotes were useful to the participants. But no one was so put off by anything or overly troubled by any of those details. They tended to give the authors a fair shake, regardless of their personal predispositions, I suppose.
What were the authors it chosen for the anthology and the particular pieces or sections chosen for the anthology, chosen with any kind of a demographic forethought in mind, taking into consideration that these are prisoners? Were they picked, were these authors and these writings picked for specifically this project for this reason?
I wanted to choose a textbook that that was challenging, that had excerpts by thinkers, writers, whose thoughts changed the world in some way or another. That these are the kinds of things that we expose our college students to at MTSU. These are the kinds of things that sometimes are seen as being reserved for a certain group of people. And so by introducing those ideas to the inmates, I wanted to open that up to them, because that really was, had not been an option for many of them before they took this sort of class. And then from those selections in the anthology, I selected things that pertained to society and community insofar as I could, but within each one of our three team talk groups, basically left it up to the individual groups or teams to decide which works from the anthology we would use.
I asked that question for two different reasons. The themes of family and religion and community that you mentioned are all positive values that one would think someone who believes in rehabilitation would want to instill in
sure.
people who are incarcerated, especially those who have an opportunity to get out on parole one day. And another reason I ask is because the elitist perspective would be that someone who would land in a maximum security institution or any kind of a major penal institution would not be enough of a deep thinker to comprehend Thoreau and Emerson and Pascal and these authors.
Mm-hmm.
And I take it from what you've told me so far that you've blown the second stereotype clean out of the water.
I think so.
And when, with regard to the first part of the question, is were they chosen with any sort of particular intent to instill positive values, or was it chosen solely on the basis of literary merit?
It's hard to say. I wouldn't say that we had a particular agenda in mind in terms of the themes of those particular works. They are great works of literature by great thinkers. I think the impulse or the desire to influence, positive values and to promote community, those things came about as much in the process of discussing literature within the kind of framework that we had established.
Mm-hmm.
That is, respect for other people's ideas, a willingness to be open-minded when approaching a work, willingness to change one's perspective if that is warranted.
It would be interesting to do a follow-up study to see whether and to what extent they continued the discussion among themselves after the program is over and after you folks left the premises. What do you think?
That would be interesting. I agree with you. I know that all of us were sorry when our time was up at the end of each week. Dr. King and I frequently would say to each other on our way out of the prison that it was the high point of our week. And many of the inmates in our class would stay afterwards and talk to us about different issues. And we never could quite finish the conversation that we started. I think that there were obviously pieces in the anthology that they liked better than others, but they were willing to do the work because they enjoyed reading and they enjoyed having those kinds of conversations and having those kinds of opportunities. And when they got the opportunity to talk about a work that they particularly liked, well, that made up for the one that they had to read that they found so hard. But the one that one person found so hard or not as enjoyable as another person in the class said, well, this one is my favorite, and here's why. I really identify with this writer.
Did they run across words in the course of their reading that they had never seen before and have to ask you, what does this word mean?
Absolutely. And I'm pleased to say that we anticipated that problem when we wrote the grant. One of the things that I submitted in there was a request for money to purchase dictionaries, because it occurred to me that many of the inmates didn't have ready access to a dictionary, and that if we're going to ask them to do college level reading, it would be challenging for any of my students, at freshmen, sophomore, junior, seniors, here at MTSU. It'd be challenging for them. We knew it would be challenging for the inmates at the institution. So we purchased dictionaries, and that enabled them to be able to look up the words and to increase their vocabulary. We also gave the dictionaries as a gift to the inmates who successfully completed the course, with the idea that it would encourage them to continue building their vocabulary. And many of them, as they prepared to enter the free world and looked for jobs and to write letters, that they would have that as a resource.
Were any of them embarrassed by their own lack of grammatical skills? Were they afraid to say "ain't got no" in your presence or anything like that?
Well, some were more vocal than others. There were some members of our class who were very quiet. They really hesitated to participate, and we encouraged them, but we kind of encouraged them gently, because we didn't want people to feel put on the spot too much. We wanted everybody to have an equal opportunity to participate, but if they elected to be quiet, then that was fine. We had some who had no problem at all participating. There were some who were very articulate. There were others who were less articulate, but what we could tell was the ones even who were not as articulate, they were still thoughtful. They had read the material for the day. They had thought about it. They knew what they wanted to say, but they were having difficulty expressing it in language. So for them, it usually just took a little bit longer. But we listened, and eventually we would understand what it was that they were talking about.
A few of them might have had, they knew you were an English professor. They might have had the kind of English teachers in K through 12 who corrected their every grammatical flaw in front of all the other students in the
right.
class, which would not make a person feel very good.
No, you're absolutely right, and I think that was the case. And we heard occasional stories about, you know, what it was like in junior high or high school, bad experiences. But our goal was not to to correct their grammar. Our goal was to facilitate a conversation about literature, to encourage them to think critically. And it helped, too, that because this was a non-credit course, a college-level course, but a non-credit course, we were not requiring written assignments. You know, these students were not required to write essays for us, and we weren't marking things and handing things back. If the inmates wanted to write something for us and give it to us to show us, then that was fine. But we weren't requiring anything like that. It was really about the conversation.
Did this course serve as a catalyst for any of them to inspire them to want to go back and get their GED, or maybe even go to college someday when they get out?
Some of the participants in our course, as well as in the courses at DeBerry and TPW, had already earned their GEDs, some of them in prison. They have the opportunity to pursue a GED, but not the opportunity to take college-level courses. There were some who talked to us after class, who told us just what you suggested, that they wanted to pursue their education further, that they felt inspired by that. Some who had made some mistakes early on and recognized that they lost out on a good opportunity to complete their schooling. Or maybe they started college and then did something stupid, which landed them in jail, and they're doing their time. Some of them were going to be getting out soon, and others were going to be there for much longer.
Does that make some of the students more and more thirsty for the kind of knowledge that you could provide through this program. The fact that they know that if they get out, they're going to have this record trailing them around for the rest of their lives. It's going to make it difficult for them to get jobs. The cost of college is going up and up and up and up and up, and this might be the only opportunity they have for a college-like, college-level experience. Does that make them yearn more for what everything that you can provide for them?
Well, it's hard to say what motivated their desire for knowledge, but that they had that knowledge was unmistakable. I mean, there really was a thirst for some kind of intellectual stimulation and for the opportunity to be in an environment where they could share their ideas and they could explore things at this level. I think that was certainly there.
If you get the money and you get a chance to do this again, would you use the same book and the same authors, or would you like to explore different authors with these different inmates?
Both. I could envision our using this same anthology at some point in the future. I could envision our using other books. We wouldn't limit ourselves to one or the other.
Would they be philosophical authors in the bent of Thoreau and Emerson, or maybe nonfiction works, the writings of Martin Luther King, for example, or something like that?
Sure, we could do all kinds of literature. We might focus on contemporary short fiction. We might focus on poetry. We might try to form other partnerships and bring writers into the prison to talk about their works. I mean, it just depends on what kind of funding, what kind of support we're able to get.
It sounds as though you and your colleagues were not scared for one minute. Did you feel safe?
I felt safe, absolutely. In fact, I was probably safer in my classroom at Riverbend than I would be out on the streets in some places. I never felt threatened, and my colleague Becky King said the same to me. Initially, it's a different world, because when you go to class and when you go to the institution to teach your class, you've got to get there early so that you can go through the security checkpoint. And it's that is something that we're not accustomed to doing. But once we were in the institution and we were in the classroom, we were perfectly comfortable.
Was there a guard in the classroom or outside the door?
There was an officer at the end of the hallway.
And that was it?
That was it.
Did you have any idea what sorts of crimes your inmates had committed? Not that that would have been of any importance in terms of who got into the class or not, but did you even think about that?
We did not know what sorts of crimes had been committed by the participants in the class, and we didn't ask. Some people shared personal information with us outside of class, you know, before or after class. Sometimes they shared in class, but we usually focused on the literature.
What was the experience like? It's totally apples and oranges, I know, but compare the overall experience in the prison classroom to your experiences in the outside world classroom here at MTSU.
Well, one of the things that we noticed was how much the participants at Riverbend appreciated what we were doing. They knew that we were driving to Nashville to teach the course, and that we both lived away. We lived outside of Nashville, and that this was in addition to our ordinary work. We felt that the participants saw this as a really good opportunity, as a gift, and we could not have found a more appreciative audience or an audience that desired to know more than they did. They always read the assignment. They always read the assignment, even when it was difficult for them. Even if it was, as I said, if it wasn't their favorite, they still read it, and they came prepared to talk about it.
that is different, I can say, as a student. Nobody fell asleep on you. Nobody's cell phone went off.
No cell phones in the prisons.
Nobody skipped class. After all, where would they go?
Where would they go? No one did any of those things. No. When they showed up, they were completely there. They were fully engaged in the process.
If anyone wants to find out more about the Great Books in Middle Tennessee Prisons program, how can they do so? Who should they contact, and how should they get a hold of them?
Well, they could contact me in the English department at MTSU, or they could contact Dan Bourne with the Great Books Foundation in Chicago.
And your telephone number and email address?
My number is 615-898-2699.
And your email address is?
pphillip@mtsu.edu.
And does Dan have a website that we can throw in here?
It would be, I think it's www.greatbooks.org.
If you try Great Books or Great Books Foundation, when you Google it, you'll probably find it.
If you type in Great Books Foundation in Google, it will pop up first, probably.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Phillips, for being with us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
This is MTSU On the Record. I'm Jenna Logue. Please join us again at the same time next Sunday. You can catch us at mtsunews.com at your leisure. And don't forget, we're also available on iTunes.